Hello, and welcome to the Degree of Freedom podcast. My name is Jonathan Haber, and today we're going to be joined by Archie Abrams, Director of Growth at Udemy, an online marketplace offering over 12,000 courses, some paid, some free, on almost every conceivable subject. I actually took a couple of Udemy courses for my Degree of Freedom one-year BA, one in art history taught by Kenny Mencher, professor of art and art history at Olone College in Fremont, California, and one on ancient Greek religion taught by Robert Garland, professor of classics at Colgate University. Now, these courses are kind of outliers in Udemy's marketplace, which is mostly made up of non-academic courses on subjects ranging from technology and business to life skills like time management and fitness. And unlike the MOOC world, where established colleges and universities get to decide who signs up to teach tens of thousands online, with Udemy, anyone could sign up to be a teacher and share his or her wisdom with the world. So what role might marketplaces play as decisions regarding who gets to teach and who one wants to be taught by increasingly become personal versus institutional choices? Let's find out by talking with a man in the thick of that conversation. Archie Abrams, welcome to Degree of Freedom.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Archie, first, can you tell me a little bit about your background and how you ended up at Udemy?
Sure. So, always interested in the edtech space. Started a company back in Boston that was focused on actually K-12 education, providing teachers with different ways of tracking and more easily keeping track of their students and their learning and what they were doing. After that, didn't go as well as we had hoped. I was really interested in the space and saw the emerging kind of online education, particularly as it related to the skills gap that was happening throughout the U.S. and really throughout the world, and really loved Udemy's approach to solving that problem. And so moved out to San Francisco a little over 2 years ago and joined Udemy then.
Listeners will be familiar with the established MOOC providers like Udacity, Coursera, and edX, but how is Udemy similar to those companies and how do they differ?
So we're similar in the sense that we all provide kind of online courseware. The big difference between Udemy and some of the established MOOC providers is how we source and how we get our content, in that we are a marketplace for courses. And what that means is we enable experts across the world to create content on subjects that they want to teach about. And what that allows is for students to have access to thousands and thousands of courses taught by local experts, field experts, who are there, practitioners who are teaching those skills to students. So students can come on, find a relevant course, learn what they want, and taught by whom they want, as opposed to some of the MOOC providers, which are providing amazing university content. Our content tends to be a little more practical, real world, taught by local experts, and a little more skills-based and less academic in nature.
And you said thousands of courses. How many courses does Udemy offer?
We have a little over 12,000 courses on the platform.
Wow. And that's grown over how many years?
The company's been around for about 4 years, adding many courses every month, and that number is growing very fast.
Your model is pretty much to let anyone who wants to create a course and distribute it through your platform. Are there any restrictions on who can do what at Udemy, and what are your quality control procedures?
Our fundamental hypothesis is, hey, there are hundreds of thousands of experts who have relevant knowledge that they want to share with the world and students who want to learn from those experts. So we are open to anybody coming on the platform. But once they create a course, we obviously want to ensure that our students have a great experience. We actually have a very robust quality control process that manually reviews every course and makes sure that both the technical components, so the audio, the video quality is very good, and that the pedagogy is also very solid, that there are solid kind of pedagogical elements in each course. Once the course is approved through our quality control procedures, then we allow kind of merchandising and more automated ways of quality control. So using things like reviews, even things like engagement within the course to determine how courses rank in our search. So we have kind of a base level, making sure every course that comes onto the platform is live, meets our quality control. And then once the course meets the quality control, really using the crowd and the data that we see about how students are engaging the course to determine how much we feature that course and how prominent that course is on the marketplace.
I've actually taken a couple of free academic classes via Udemy for my one-year BA project. Will the bulk of what you have to offer seem to be in professional or lifestyle subjects like computer programming or health or fitness? Is that intentional, or is that just how your marketplace evolved?
I think it's very much how the marketplace evolved. At the very beginning, we actually went out and got a lot of content in basically a whole host of things, academic, even cooking, et cetera, et cetera. But what we saw was that the demand for students really was in more of the professional development and some of the lifestyle subjects that were a little more personal enrichment in nature. So what ended up happening is the instructors who came onto the platform and were having a lot of success, both in terms of student enrollments and also in terms of making money, tended to be in those subjects. And so that tended to snowball and kind of amplify the effects of having content in those areas. As the marketplace evolved, and we're seeing this today, we are starting to see a lot more diversity in the content that we're getting on the platform, and that content is making money and is attracting students. So it's very much a kind of an evolving thing. But again, I think overall, it was to start, people were willing to pay for some of the professional skills, and that kind of snowballed and attracted more instructors in that area, and that attracted more students in those areas as well.
And now that you've got 12,000 courses, I noticed for subjects like, for instance, Java programming, I think I saw at least a couple dozen options for courses in Java. You mentioned leveraging the crowd. What's available to help students figure out which course is best suited for them?
So this is one of the kind of the exciting challenges that we have, which is we have a lot of content, and how do we serve it correctly to students? So we're still experimenting and still doing a lot of things to help students find. One of the major things when you talk to students is reviews and really looking at that and using those to help them make a decision. Same way people might shop for a book on Amazon. On Udemy, people are very much focused on the reviews and really hearing genuine feedback from students. The other things we do, which are a little more subtle, is for instance, in our search, when you type in Java, we're actually going to serve up courses that have very high student engagement above courses that don't engage students as well. So we're trying to do some things where we can both give students things like reviews and filters to help them sort through, but then also do some things on the back end to just make sure students are able to find courses that are the best.
Yeah, I've theorized that people are ready to spend time improving their minds, but are primarily willing to spend money on things that ultimately help them make or save more money. And one of the examples I use when I propose this theory is that while 150 people spent $9 to study Greek history on Udemy, tens of thousands paid $99 to learn Excel. So any lessons there that you've incorporated into your strategy?
Yes. I mean, I think in general, what we see is that is true, that people are willing to spend more money on training and the like. And that's what's attracted a lot of the content providers that we have tend to be focused there. And as a result, when we have that content and those guys were making money, that was what brought more students on into those core areas. So it kind of snowballed there. We have seen, which is great to see in our marketplace, is that there is more and more of a demand for personal enrichment courses. And we've seen real lift in some of those categories. So we're excited kind of as the marketplace evolves to be very much focused on skills-based content, helping people learn Excel, learn pivot tables, learn how to program in Java. But then we are seeing really interesting things as we get some more content in some of the other categories that are less skills-based and less make or save money, that there is pickup in those areas as well. So excited to see how that evolves over the next year or so.
Presuming we have some listeners out there who might want to get into the game, what's the deal? What's how does it work if you sign up to become a Udemy instructor?
If you become a Udemy instructor, you can head over to udemy.com/teach. And we try to do is make it as easy of a process as possible to create your course. So we know it's a challenge to go out and to film video and to edit video and to create a sound course. So we have a lot of resources, a lot of support, a bunch of different Facebook groups where different instructors get together and talk about different strategies for recording their video or audio or how to structure their lessons, very robust materials to kind of guide people through. So we put a very much focus on kind of helping people kind of come in and get the support they need through our community groups and just through the resources that we create for them. So that's a big way that instructors find helpful in terms of getting up to speed and getting started quickly.
Okay. And if I recall, once you create a course for Udemy, you can give it away for free. You could sell it for any price you like. Is there any restrictions? What's the revenue share?
The instructor completely controls the pricing. So it could be completely free, as you mentioned, or up to $999 for the course. And instructors, the way the rev share works is we operate on a base rev share about a 50-50. So meaning a student comes in, let's say they just type in Udemy.com, browse the site, buy the course, the revenue is split 50-50 between the instructor and Udemy. When the instructor goes out and brings the student, so that might mean sending to your friend via email, if you put a little coupon code or a little tracker in that link, the instructor actually takes 100% of the revenue going forward. So I think if the instructor wants to promote and you're promoting an active, it's 100% to the instructor. And in other cases, the base rev share is a 50-50 split between us and the instructor. If it's a free course, it's completely free to use the platform, completely free to give it away to students. And that's something that a lot of instructors do to build their brand or just share their knowledge.
Okay. I think in my introduction to you, I gave your title as Director of Growth. Is that right?
That's right.
Which is a sort of combination business development and marketing position.
And mostly kind of on the online marketing side and doing things to get more students excited about the platform and come in and taking courses.
And along those lines, I see you've got a certification track option as well as a Udemy at Work program. Can you talk about some of the initiatives Udemy is involved with in order to expand its reach?
Sure. So on the certificate track, we basically have a lot of content that's designed to help students pass industry certifications. So whether that's Cisco training or Microsoft certification or Adobe certification, we want to provide relevant content to help students pass and get certified by those bodies. So that's one angle where we have for the certificate track content. The other area is we also did a partnership along with some of the other MOOC providers with LinkedIn that enables students when they complete their courses to share that certificate or that completion on their LinkedIn profile as a way to give further meaning to their coursework and show potential employers about the education they've been involved with. On the Udemy for Work side, very excited about creating a new platform that's really designed for corporations to bring Udemy content to their offices and to their workplaces and to create a new training solution for corporations who want to leverage our training with their employees. So early stages there, but very excited about kind of expanding Udemy's reach, both doing more on some of the certification things with LinkedIn, and then also bringing Udemy to work and to organizations.
Finally, 12,000 courses, and I guess you're adding several hundred more a month. Where do you see the Udemy marketplace evolving over the next couple of years?
So I think the two areas we're really excited about is because we're an open marketplace, because we enable anybody to create content for the marketplace, seeing two areas we're very excited for. So one is expanding into new markets. So internationally, we actually had our biggest month ever for Spanish courses coming onto the platform. So very excited to see the growth in international markets. And again, kind of our model is such that because the content creators are the ones, or the experts are the ones who are creating the content, we're not going through the process of translating content. We're enabling people on site in the location to actually create content that's meant for that audience in that international market. So really excited about seeing the marketplace become a lot more international over the next couple of years. In addition to that, also very excited about building out some of the other learning verticals that exist. So as you mentioned, very heavy in technology and business. Those are our two core verticals. There's a lot of other learning verticals that we're really excited to get content in. So things like design, personal development, more health and fitness, some hobby content as well. And we're already seeing just organic pickup, more instructors who teach courses in those areas coming onto the platform and creating content for it. So really excited to see more international content and then also more learning verticals coming onto the platform and broadening it and making the marketplace even more diverse.
Okay, well, Archie, I appreciate the time, and thanks for talking with folks here on Degree of Freedom.
Thanks, Jonathan. Appreciate it.
That was Archie Abrams, Director of Growth at Udemy. Now, as you just heard, online learning is fast breaking the boundaries of the institution. After a year of intense study, I think it's still safe to say that MOOCs do the best job in packaging contents of a course, including lectures, reading and writing assignments, problem sets and assessments, forum and discussion opportunities into a coherent whole. And I'm hoping that some of the experimentation and innovation being put into MOOC development eventually finds its way into other forms of online learning, from paid online academic classes to do-it-yourself courses offered by companies like Udemy. Having said that, I had a number of terrific learning experiences using free learning resources from places outside the traditional MOOC providers. So while there's still a lot to say about MOOCs, and a lot of people from MOOClandia still to interview, I'm hoping to dedicate some of this year's Degree of Freedom podcast to people doing interesting things in free learning beyond the confines of an edX or Coursera. And speaking of edX, last fall the organization made waves when they announced a partnership with Google to create MOOC.org, a platform that will allow anyone to use the open-source edX learning management system to create their own courses and share them with the world for free. And while I received a lot of email from people wondering if this would spell the end of higher education as we know it, versus the last 10 MOOC-related breakthroughs that were supposed to reduce traditional colleges and universities to rubble, my first thought was whether MOOC.org would ultimately resemble its parent MOOC provider by showcasing academic courses, or end up a competitor with Udemy with a focus on professional or personal training. The market, after all, tends to go where the money is, and as Archie and I just discussed, people seem willing to spend money on training that will help them improve their financial picture, even if they'll spend countless hours on improving their minds and souls by enrolling and participating in a massive online literature or astronomy class, one which might never impact their financial bottom line. But regardless of what Adam Smith or Karl Marx might say, human beings are interested in more than just their pocketbooks, which means there's room for different types of learning in most people's lives. For instance, you're only listening to me right now because I learned about audio recording and editing, podcasting production and distribution, and WordPress self-hosting by taking online video courses in those and other subjects at lynda.com, another commercial training provider whose president, Eric Robison, joined us for an interview last year. But one of the things I've grown to appreciate most about MOOCs is how much they are liberated from what are perceived to be immediate requirements of a commercial market. While I'm not privy to the inner workings of companies like lynda.com, I suspect that if Professor Stewart from the University of Copenhagen proposed to offer a course on Kierkegaard, they would politely decline. And while Professor Stewart could create his own course and deliver it via Udemy, would likely get lost in the sea of programming and business offerings and attract no more than the few hundred people who tend to sign up for other Udemy humanities classes. But when that course was packaged up as a MOOC and delivered via Coursera, suddenly tens of thousands of people worldwide, including me, signed up to learn about an important subject that might not land us our next job, but certainly got us to think about the world in different and important ways. This points out the irony, the central concept discussed in that Kierkegaard class, by the way, that market forces can assign different value to the same product based on seemingly arbitrary factors, such as how that product is distributed. For instance, that Kierkegaard MOOC that I've been rambling about is treated more like a genuine college course, not because it came from the University of Copenhagen, a school no less prestigious than Colgate, where the professor of that Greek religion course I just mentioned taught, but because it was attached to Coursera, i.e. the MOOC brand. And as more and more courses get released on more and more platforms over the coming years, it'll be interesting to see how the market, whatever that means, treats them with regard to awarding dollars, prestige, or students. And on that note, it's time to call it a day. But I hope you join me next time on the Degree of Freedom podcast.